Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken care of. It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now it's up to Gordon Beckham to bat. Lead things off for the Sox here in the 11th and see if he can do some damage.
Pitch to Gordon, a high fly to left. Is it well? Going back to the track, along the fence, jumps. Home run! Sox win! Sox win on a Beckham home run!
He starts the tremendous double play to end the threat for Texas, and first pitch swinging, it's gone.
Beckham's first game-ending homer.
Hit and run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
That's pretty cool. Gordon Beckham with the walk-off homer on Father's Day. Didn't he walk it off on Mother's Day that year, too?
Yep.
He was the king of the parental celebration day walk-off. The undisputed king. And last I looked, last year was still playing in MLB. Not quite the superstar some of us thought he might be, but a lot longer baseball career than you or me. Good morning to you. It's Hit and Run right here on 670 The Score. One more hour to go, then Mark Grody will join me. Ozzie Guillen Jr. a little bit later on this hour on growing up Guillen and being Guillen around MLB. But I've been on his show a few times over recent months and decided I wanted to ask the man to come on this one. He is Lawrence Holmes. You hear him middays on The Score, and he joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Lawrence. What's up?
What's happening, Speaks? Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely, man. Of course. I love talking baseball with you and lots of things with you. So I just talked to my dad last hour. I retweeted. I have not listened yet. You had your dad on House of L on the podcast this week. What was that like to, oh, hi, Dad. How you doing? I know you. Let's have a conversation. How did that go?
It was great. It's out now if people want to check it out. And House of L is on Apple Podcasts. It's on Stitcher. It's on Spotify. You can just search for it. And it was really great because my dad is pretty quiet. He's the quiet one in the family. And Tony Gillett actually said to me, hey, were you going to interview your mom for Mother's Day? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't think about it. And then he's like, well, you should. And he's right. Like, I actually had done this assignment with my students this quarter. And I do it every quarter that I'm teaching at DePaul, where I have them do interviews. And then what we do is we go through the interviews and think about, like, the follow-up questions that could have been asked. And then they go back and they ask those follow-up questions. Well, because of coronavirus, their choices on who to interview were a little limited. So most of them ended up interviewing family members, parents, finding out what it was that they did. And I think that it's a really good thing. Like, honestly, you don't have to have a podcast to do it. I think that it's a good thing to do, to put something on the record with your parent or your parent-like figure so that you can have it, whether that's for you later on or it's for someone else in your family. So it made a lot of sense when Tony broke it down. And I talked with my dad, and I figured I would put it out on Father's Day weekend, and it was great. You have the convergence of Juneteenth and Father's Day weekend for me and my dad to talk about a lot of stuff. And there's stuff that, even though I consider myself close to my dad, that I didn't know. Like, I knew he was in the Army, but I didn't know how the Vietnam War had affected him. So we talked about that. I knew that he had a whole bunch of jobs, which, you know, seems to play out for his sons, too. But I didn't know why he had a whole bunch of jobs. I knew that my grandfather played in the Negro Leagues, but I didn't know if my grandfather was good and why it was that it seemed to skip a generation. Like, my dad didn't really play sports, even though he loved sports. So there was so much to get into, and it was great. And that's before we even talk about his famous friends. Like, here, Speaks, this is a story that I think you can relate to. And we didn't talk about it, but we did talk about the famous friend. So a few years ago, me and my brother are over at my parents' house. My mother finds this thing, and it's an invitation. It's an invitation to the, I want to say, the 2004-2005 Grammys. It's just in this beautiful box. Now, my brother is a Grammy voter, okay, because of his work in house music and everything else. And we're like, what is this? And he's like, oh, you know, it's an invitation to the Grammys. You know, I must have forgotten about it, because that's how my dad is. Like, he's just kind of like that. And we're like, how did you get invitations for four people to the Grammys? Oh, yeah. Well, Donda's kid was nominated for a Grammy. And we're like, you mean Kanye? Yeah.
I was like, you said Donda. I'm like, wait a minute, I know that name.
Yeah. So Donda, Dr. Donda West was the she was my dad's boss at Chicago State. Like, they were good friends. She was the department chair for him. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, I hear Donda's kid is doing really well with music. And me and my brother are just looking at each other like, we could have been at the Grammys at Donda West's table. So, I mean, it's stuff like that where I wanted to talk to my dad about it, because to him, like, it's, those are just his friends. Like, him telling me stories about Gwen, a.k.a. Gwendolyn Brooks. Those are just his friends. So I wanted to do a deeper dive on it, and that's what we did on the podcast.
What was his knowledge, relationship, experience with your grandfather's Negro Leagues experience? Or I guess, what was your dad's understanding of it from your grandfather's perspective?
So I think I probably sent you the pictures of him, yes, of the gloves, right? Like, we've, yes. So I have three of my grandfather's gloves from the Negro Leagues, like, hung up on a wall in my house. And, you know, you hear the stories, but you know how it was, like, back in the 30s and stuff. Like, those leagues, there was barnstorming, there's all sorts of stuff. I didn't know, and my father was telling me, he's like, yeah, you know, your grandfather was pretty good. And he thought that it was hysterical that I became a catcher, because that's the position that my grandfather played. And there wasn't any, like, coaching as far as that went. Like, my grandfather never, like, pushed me towards playing catcher. He didn't talk a lot. Like, and so him telling me stories about my grandfather growing up in Chattanooga and I believe playing for the Chattanooga Chicksaws back then, and saying that my grandfather was actually pretty good at it. And that whenever his uncle, when my dad's uncle would come to town, they would go out and they would play catch and they would tell stories and all sorts of stuff. And it's just interesting that never really grabbed hold of my dad, but it somehow grabbed hold of me. So my grandfather gave me my first glove when I was 4 years old. And that's how I kind of began to love playing baseball. And this is obviously, like, before I even know any of this stuff. I just knew that he wanted me to learn how to catch and throw. And early on, we would start with a tennis ball because you don't want to break anything. And it's one of my first real memories that I have. So getting a little bit more information on what that was like for my grandfather through my dad was excellent. Like, hearing him talk about all of this stuff was really crazy. So I highly recommend people check out this week's House of L episode with my father. And there's other great stuff on the House of L platform, too. Like, if you want to listen to the Matt Abaticola interview or the Mark Grody interview or the Jason Goff interview, it's tons of stuff on there that's awesome. But it was really cool to sit down with my dad and have him tell some stories.
Mm-hmm. I'll look forward to hearing it. So I've been thinking about the Negro Leagues because, you know, I think about the things that history has done, that this country has done to African Americans, and the way that African Americans have responded at different times throughout our history. The Negro Leagues is one of the most beautiful, impressive chapters in the history of the disadvantaged, or like, look what came out of exclusion, you know? Like, yep. You're excluded from MLB. And they said, you know what? F it. Let's do this ourselves. And turned it into this self-sustaining, remarkably high-level, impressive, well-functioning, and loved, beloved entity of the Negro Leagues. It's a great accomplishment when you look back at it historically.
I haven't had a chance to read the story. It's just something that kind of crossed my timeline that I put a pin in, and I'm going to go back. Apparently, there's some story about a group of black players playing a bunch of Klansmen in a baseball game and beating them. And there having to be rules about, you know, what was going to be allowed on the field at the time. Like, what type of language, like, what say, like, sort of stuff went on. So I want to read it, but it's that type of thing that's fascinating. And if you look at a lot of things when it comes to black history, where a lot of the things that you and I love to eat, like the idea of soul food, that comes from not having anything.
Sure.
And taking the scraps of food that you have and figuring out a way for it to nourish your family and to be tasty. And that creativity kind of shines through. And you can see it when you talk about, you know, Negro Leagues baseball, those uniforms. I get a chance every year for the Amateur City Elite program through the White Sox. They do kind of a tribute to Ted Double Duty Ratcliffe, and they do the East West game that used to be played over on the South Side with the Negro League All Stars. And seeing these young guys like Ed Howard, for example, Pierce Jones, like seeing those young guys put those uniforms on,
man,
and love those uniforms and be like, man, this is cool, and embracing that aspect of their history is awesome. There are a lot of people inside baseball, I think, that they simplify it, but I do think that there is some, it has some reason to it, that baseball did a lot for race relations in America. That's the really simplified version of it. I just want to say that. But it did, and there were things that happened inside of sports that happened in baseball in particular, happened there before it happened in other portions of American society. And those are things that we do need to learn more about and need to celebrate. And I don't know if you've ever had Bob Kendrick on, but
not.
You should. That is a perfect hit and run guess. I'm gonna make that recommendation for you, Speaks, because
cool.
You and Bob Kendrick would sit there for an hour talking about the game and the Negro Leagues. I love that guy so much. He came on my show and he was telling me stories about Ichiro coming to the Negro Leagues Museum and then writing a big ass check to the museum because of all the things that he learned and how he felt a connection that coming from Japan.
Yeah.
He felt a connection with those Negro Leagues players. And honestly, like, if you look at Ichiro's career and you look at the way that he played the game, you can kind of see it. You're like, oh yeah, I can see where that may have been one of the many influences that happened on this guy. But put it on your list of guests. Put Bob Kendrick on your show. Because he's amazing.
I will absolutely do that. I remember reading about Ichiro and some of the feelings that he eventually shared about the Negro Leagues Museum and about, because he could relate to a feeling, some level of prejudice and some level of difference. And
of otherness, yeah.
Of otherness. And that is so relatable for all of us in our history somewhere. I wish people could just access that. If they're having a moment, they're thinking, how do these people feel about being the other or whatever? Just remember, like, it's really visceral and easy for me as a Jewish person to think back to stories from my grandmother about the Warsaw Ghetto. You know, it's real easy to get there and realize that time and space there, but for the grace of God, could go I, right? Like, so, and every culture should have that somewhere, that somewhere back at some point, your people, your ancestors were told you're not good enough. That's really the entirety of the empathy that maybe not the entirety, but it's a big part of the empathy that needs to take place. Look, we're talking about the Negro Leagues, and it reminded me of Black Wall Street as we're talking about it, because sometimes when you are excluded or told you can't be a part of it, you build your own thing. And I didn't know about Tulsa and Black Wall Street. And I was horrified to realize that I didn't know. At the age of 49, I love history. I gobbled history. I've gobbled culture in lots of different ways. And somehow I didn't know until that viral rant from Kimberly Jones made me realize I needed to do some research. And now I know. And I'm wondering, it, you as an educator, as the children of educators, how have stories like that not been in the curriculum and available for American history? It's pathetic that they have not been, and that needs to change greatly.
It's so interesting to me that this past week, Friday, I spent a lot of time talking about Juneteenth, and I talked a little bit about Tulsa. And with Tulsa, I was talking about it in the context of the show Watchmen, because, you know, I'm a big geek and I love stuff like that. And what I found amazing was all the people that when Watchmen came out last fall, the first episode starts in Tulsa in 1921. And because of it being Watchmen and it being, you know, a graphic novel turned into a movie that's now being forwarded on this limited series on HBO, which, by the way, you can watch it still for free today on HBO.com. There were a lot of people that thought that the Tulsa Massacre was the fiction.
Yeah.
Not realizing that it was a real moment in our country's history that was used as a jumping off point to help tell the story. And whether it was people on my show or folks that have just kind of come around to maybe rewatching Watchmen again with the context of knowing what happened in Tulsa. Yeah. Like it makes you ask the question, and Speaks, it's the right question. It's the right question that everyone should ask. Why don't I know about this?
Yeah.
Why wasn't I taught this? And that's the way that I look at systemic racism and say, you might be thinking that this is something that has come up and that it only affects people of color. That is a real example of how it affects white people too. That you're sitting around here going, I have no idea what I don't know.
Crazy.
And it's not fair to the educational process of everyone that there are stories like that that haven't been told. Because I think if those stories are told, It makes it easier for there to be empathy and to be understanding. And I was joking with people on Friday that I'm sure that there were plenty of people that got an email from the company that they work for talking about Juneteenth. And they were like, what the hell is Juneteenth?
Yeah.
And then once you explain it to people, they go, oh, we should really celebrate that. That's an awesome thing to celebrate as a republic.
Mm. Yeah, this is the moment to learn that stuff and do what we can about kind of building it back into the consciousness, because it's just, I mean, sports and music, my two worlds, are a spot where talent is undeniable. It's just undeniable. And at times, at its best, it acts as a leveler and takes away bias, or teaches you not to have bias, or just removes it because you have no choice but to be like, you know what? That third violinist is better than me. I am the fourth violinist, and it doesn't matter who that person is and why they're better. Or that guy has a feel on the bass that is just better, and I should not be in the band. Whatever it is, So even me with like those wide eyes open and my hippie sensibilities and can't we all get along? Hell, I've been underinformed. So it's
Speaks. The thing is that you're someone who listens to music and you listen to it with an ear that I think is different from most people. I would tell folks, go back and listen to some of that. That's folks that are our age, you know, the score middle children age.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and listen to rap music in the 80s and early 90s. Go back and listen to Public Enemy. Go back and listen to NWA and Ice Cube. Go back and listen to Rakim and some of the stories that were being told. It's I think that a lot of times hip hop in particular gets put in this box of party music. And yes, there is a great element of party music aspect of it. But if you're listening to KRS-One or Chuck D or Q-Tip, they're telling you stories.
Yes.
And a lot of those stories were from a place of truth. And if you think that Ice Cube, that's the guy that's making Are We There Yet, is the guy that he is, go back and listen to his music because a lot of those things were in there. And my brother like absolutely blew my mind with the whole thing about Gap Band.
Oh my God.
And Tulsa. And then Speaks, you know what's crazy? And I know you got a break. I know you got all sorts of stuff to do. It's crazy that Friday night I'm sitting there just watching TV. I turned on CNN and there's Cornel West. And Cornel West and Anderson Cooper are having this conversation. And he shouts out the Gap Band because here's another thing I didn't know. Cornel West, born and raised in Tulsa.
Wow.
In he grew up with the Wilson brothers.
Crazy.
Right there in the neighborhood that got firebombed by the government. Mm. And whether it's Tulsa or Rosewood, if you really want to be mad at America, watch the movie Rosewood. It will turn your stomach. And a lot of people think that these are dramatizations, and they are, like, but they are telling the stories of what went down there, and those are things that people need to know.
Yeah, and it was everywhere. There were race riots in Chicago in 1919. Yep. Eve Ewing from the University of Chicago, among other things, just put out a book of poetry based on something that she had read from 1923, and it was a lot of people in Chicago, academics and well-meaning people, writing about how do we deal with the racial issues in Chicago today. And it's 100 years old, and it is the same freaking stuff. And yep. I heard her talking about it, and I want to go out and get that book. But like, it's 100 years ago. That's three different ones for people to know about. If you care, and you should, Rosewood, Tulsa, and even Chicago in 1919, and it's
can I add something to Ruben's reading list?
Yes, please.
All right, so you're talking about Eve Ewing, right?
Yeah.
Eve Ewing created a character called Ironheart, who is Iron Man's protege, but she's black and she's from Chicago. I think that Ruben would really enjoy it. Like, she has her own like Iron Man suit, and she's 15 years old. And she deals with a lot of things that Chicagoans of color deal with, even though she's a superhero. I highly recommend it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Because we all, if we're good fathers, if this is a day to think about it, we want to do what we can to put more empathetic humans in the world. More empathetic, kind, well, you know, good-hearted humans in the world. That's really what I can do. So I'll take that recommendation to heart. Lawrence, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate you. And happy Father's Day to your pops, all right?
Yes, happy Father's Day to your pops and to you, Speaks. Thanks for giving me the platform to talk with you.
Of course, of course. That's Lawrence Holmes. You hear him noon to 2 every day, Monday through Friday, on 670 The Score. What is it like growing up in MLB and growing up Guillen? Let's talk to Ozzy Jr. next on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Tying run at second, two out, Palmeiro over the head of Jenks. Uribe charges, throws, out! And the White Sox have won the World Series. Juan Uribe with a play, charging it, throwing it, and the White Sox celebrate their first title in 88 years.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Yes, indeed. Ozzy Guillen, one of the more colorful, one of the more interesting, thought-provoking figures this baseball town has ever seen. When I was hosting during the final couple years of Ozzie Guillen's managing career, 2010, 2011, 2009, he was gold, absolute gold, because he seemed to be telling the truth so often after a game. I still remember one of my favorite days hosting was when the White Sox played like absolute trash and Ozzie came out and destroyed the team honestly, specifically, and at the end said, and Danks pitched well. Because that was the one good thing from the entire day in the bad stretch. So what was it like to grow up with that man as a father? I want to know here on Father's Day. And right now joining us in Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park, is Ozzie Guillen Jr. Long time no talk, long time no see, Ozzie Guillen Jr. Thank you for some time this morning. How you doing?
Happy Father's Day to you. No, it's been too long. I'm doing great, man. I got my health. Good day today, celebrating with my kids and my father. Man, that sound bite sounded good on getting that last out in the World Series. You explain Ozzy how he is. You think he's honest in baseball? try to test him in real life. It was very different. It was I didn't have that cuddly, you know, kind of the dad that maybe might be a little bit gullible and lie to you about things. And it got more intense as we got older. But I think it was the best thing possible, and it gave me a reality of what the real world was going to be like.
See, that's interesting, because as a ball player, I heard people say that about Ozzy all the time. He just wasn't going to BS you. He wasn't. And you know, when you're growing up a great athlete and then you're paid a lot and people want to get the most out of you, a lot of time people will blow sunshine. That did not happen. So you're saying he didn't do that much for you as a kid either?
No. Especially with athletics. You know, Ozzy made something very clear. You know, I think that when you're like the Barry Bonds of the world or the Vladimir Guerreros, not Fernando Tatis Jr., even guys like that got to get to play in the minor leagues, Ozzy was always very like, you know, I have this special skill in baseball. It's not normal. You know, I worked really hard for it. And if you want to get it, it's probably going to be really, really hard. So you should do really well in school, because the chances of you making it to baseball probably seem to none. And he was just very honest, you know. He always tried to make you better. He was never satisfied. He was never a dad that, you know, sat there and said, oh, my kid's so good. You know, he's this type of player. He's this type of guy, just in anything in life. And he was just trying to prepare us to, you know, to be responsible. And I think it's crazy. You know, Ozzy had a rule when we turned of age that he was like, I want no DUIs and I don't want you guys to have kids. Just start having kids all over the place. And we're like, what do you mean? Like, because when you're a father, you got to be responsible. So I want you guys to know that, you know, if you guys come here and say, hey, you know, I just got some girl knocked up or whatever, that I'm going to come here and like raise this kid for you. It's like, okay, good job. You know, now be responsible. So he was just very, very real, very in your face growing up, which was something that I think is necessary, I think, as a parent, because the world is cruel. The world is real. And I think as a parent, sometimes we forget that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think about it now as a parent myself. I know I'm guilty of soft pedaling it sometimes and being too kind.
Oh, so am I. I'm going to be the same way. Trust me. I hope that my kid's at least decent enough to, like, you know, that I wouldn't have that conversation with him. But Ozzy was just very honest. Like, you know, you're not very good at this, or, you know, you should think about doing something else. And it was just honest. It was with love, but it was just having, you know, sit down conversations. And we still do. I think that, you know, a lot of things could be argued about Ozzy. I think that honesty is not one of them. And I think, you know, you could argue that is he been a good manager? Is he a good baseball player? Again, stats speak for themselves. Again, that's always up to interpretation and whatever you like. But him as a parent, you know, where we come from and what Ozzy's been able to do within one generation, I think that's his biggest legacy. Him and my uncles, of what they've been able to do with where they come from, just by hard work and keeping focused, because He has done a great job, and now I have my own family, and everyone's kind of set the ways, and now he's a grandfather, and he gets to enjoy that part. But it's a lot. It's not just people always look at the money and like, oh yeah, they made, you know, Ozzy made a lot of money, and you know that's why. It's not true. There's a lot of players that have made a lot of money that, you know, that second generation doesn't have what, you know, the morals or the lifestyle that they should, because of decisions made early. And Ozzy made sure of that. Ozzy made sure that, you know, we're in a better situation from our humble beginnings than where he started. So I think that's all to father. And the other thing is providing, man. Ozzy, you know, when you look at his biography, we always laugh because we always wake up and say we have to work harder than Ozzy, than my father. You know, he is in his 50s now. He's transitioning to this, you know, TV media person, and he's always transitioning into something else. He's always been able to reinvent himself, and that's because of work. I think that he feels like if he's not working, that he's not providing, and that's something that's instilled in him because of the whole providing for your family mentality. And you know what? Kudos to him, because I know it's not easy, not especially someone like himself, but he's done a great job. You can't argue that he's been a good father now.
Boy, this is fun talking to Ozzie Guillen Jr. Ozzie Guillen Jr. hosts Being Guillen on La Vida Baseball, and you can find him on Twitter, and you can find La Vida Baseball at LaVidaBaseball.com. And Being Guillen, and Ozzie Jr. used to host right here on 670 The Score. I remember often hearing you and your brothers and others on The Score. So it's nice to get to talk to you. Boy, the way you talk about it, see, the perspective is there, man. It's like the baseball is one thing, but in one generation to come from Venezuela, for him and your uncles to get here and then have kids like you building a family in a better circumstance than he came from in Venezuela, with morals intact and with work ethic intact, that's legacy. That is a bigger legacy than a World Series. It's a bigger legacy than the ball-playing career and any kind of media thing. That's the kind of stuff that will last, and it's nice that you feel that. And have you been able to say that to him? Have you been able to express that kind of stuff to him?
I have, especially sometimes when there's downtime, you know, because I see Ozzy as in two different ways. I see Ozzy, obviously, the father. I'm very close to him. He's family, you know, but then I look at Ozzy from the perspective of a man, of a Hispanic man, of, you know, being first generation and seeing, like, where my grandparents were at, and then seeing what he has been able to do and what he's been able to accomplish with, you know, very little education, being really good at one thing, which is catching ground balls, because he wasn't a great hitter, but making catching ground balls something amazing, you know, having that leadership and drive, something that he was born with, and then, you know, and then transition into that, into a playing career, then a coaching career, then a managerial career, and then, you know, being able to do TV. And it's just transcending that as a man. I admire it because, you know, I have all these skill sets. I have all this education. I have, you know, degrees. I have so many more opportunities, and I'm not even, you know, close to it. And I'm already 36 years old. So when you look at the comparison of what Ozzy was doing then, it's admirable when it comes to that. So I always let him know that, you know, we have to remember where we come from, in the sense that, you know, where we started or where we're going to be at. And I think that is the legacy. I think that the legacy for Ozzy is that of him, the man. I think sometimes the reason that I think people think that he doesn't care about other things is because he's so enshrined on him being judged, on him being a father, and being a provider, that he doesn't care about anything else. Like, if he gets 100% in one side and he's like a 10% somewhere else, he's like, I don't care, because that's his focus. And that I admire, because it's really at heart to be able to do that. But I think it's a great example. I think if you grab that part of Ozzy's chapter in his book and you're looking someone to model or look after, I think the drive for work and the drive for your family and being able to provide, mm-hmm. and doing whatever it takes to push him forward and, you know, raising kids with great morals is definitely something that I would steal that page from his chapter.
So 1985 is Ozzy's first year as a member of the White Sox, and that's when you're born, Ozzy Jr., the firstborn. He's here until 97. So do you have memories as a kid, as a toddler and beyond, in that White Sox locker room and at old Comiskey there for a while, and then obviously the new one, U.S. Cellular? Do you have memories there from that chapter before he came back and managed again?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's when I was a diehard White Sox fan. I had great memories growing up in the Sox, obviously his first year. It's funny because Ozzy always mentions that, you know, I was the game changer, because he thought baseball was something that was just for fun. And once he was going to become a dad, he realized, oh, my God, I need to provide. This is a big responsibility. And it actually helped him in his career. I think that it was great for Ozzy. He was very lucky to land in one place. Okay, land in a city like Chicago that allowed him to have a lot of balance in raising a family, a great foundation.
But how about you, Ozzie Jr.? Because I wonder, like,
For me?
That feels like a fantasy to me, to be 8, 9, 10 years old and have your dad be a big leaguer. Did you get to hang around the clubhouse?
Of course I grew up around the clubhouse. You know, I think my favorite one was the Gene Lamont years, because Gene Lamont's son and daughter were around our age, and Tim Raines' kids were around our age. And we just grew up, you know, being around the clubhouse. And you know, when I went to Frank's, you know, seeing Frank get inducted and then Harold, it's like, wow, man, I've known these guys my whole life, you know, since I was a little kid. Yeah. And now to see them get inducted, now I think as an adult, I appreciate it more. Ozzie, he knew that we loved baseball, so our seats were not regular family seats. He actually would pay, and our seats were behind, six rows behind the home plate at New Comiskey Park at Guaranteed Rate. So now where the scout seats are at, that's where I watched White Sox baseball since the new stadium. Okay, so I watched everyone walk through there, and all the other opposing teams knew that those were Ozzie's kids there that would sit there, because we would watch the games and, you know, we'd scream, heckle, and do whatever it is that we did. But looking back at it now, it's not, you know, all the guys that I considered my heroes, guys that I admired, I knew them. I grew up around them. And it was fun. It was a fun time in baseball. It was a fun time, I think, in the game. And you know what? I think that people don't realize this, that when people ask them, you know, why are you guys so close to the media? You know, it's because the media saw us growing up. You know, I had people in the clubhouse that saw me there as a toddler, and some of them even taught me in college. And then I worked with other individuals on the score and in other stations. And then, you know, I'm interviewing them now on La Vida Baseball, and I'm asking their input, and they're sending me messages that Happy Father's Day. So it's a family thing. You know, the chances that we grew up in one place has made it, it's not just the team, it's a Chicago thing. It's a family thing for us because we grew up in it, and it was awesome. You know, I didn't realize that Ozzie was who he was, because I think that the way that the people that we were around never let it happen that way. But I think that once I started getting into my high school years, that I was looking at it from like an older perspective, I realized, okay, this is not normal. Yeah. You know, having Frank Thomas go up to Frank and say, hey, sign this. I have a funny story. So now that I'm older, I'm like, man, that must have been annoying. So there was like this whole thing that I found out as an adult that Carlton Fisk wouldn't sign a lot, okay? He was a very harsh signature to get. And my brother and myself would literally ask Carlton to sign literally every other day. We'd just go up to him and be like, hey, can you sign this? And he would sign it 100% of the time.
Wow.
So I'm like things like that is like, you know, it's unrealistic. And I think that's why we love the game of baseball, and we've been around it for so long, is because we grew up in it, and it was fun. Growing up in a clubhouse, it was very interesting, but it was a heck of a good time.
That's awesome. And then, but then traveling around, it's got to be tough when your dad becomes an Oriole and then a Brave and then a Devil Ray over the course of about 3.5-4 years. Did home always stay Chicago, Ozzie Jr.? How much did you guys go around?
So Ozzie has an obsession, obviously, with the White Sox. And it has all the way back to the player, and you can't blame him for that. We had our house. I remember I was about to be in seventh grade, and we stayed living here. And Ozzie was just at this point, you know, dwindling his career, and was where, you know, as a backup player and helping out and wherever they needed him to be in a winning team. And we never wanted to move to those cities. We would go in the summer, spend a couple, you know, be there during when the team was at home. And then when they go on the road, we either, you know, come back to Chicago or go back to Venezuela. But we always knew we wanted to come back to Chicago. And it's funny because we sold our house in Chicago in 2000, 2001. And we moved to Florida. I was already about to start high school, and they needed a home. And it was no longer the Chicago home. It was a Florida home. I had never lived in Florida. I went to boarding school about an hour and a half away, 2 hours from that home, but it was just an address. And that's why Austin, my youngest brother, grows up in Miami, but Chicago was always home. And then one thing led to another, and Ozzie interviews for the Sox job, and that's how we come back to Chicago in 04, is because he had landed a job. But we always had intentions of coming back in one shape or form, because we loved it. People always talk about like heartbreaks. When Ozzie left, When Ozzie was not signed back in after the 97 season, I think it was way more devastating than any time that he left, because it was the loss of innocence, because that was my team. That was you know, those were my guys. That was our clubhouse. You know, that was my life. Later on, it was, I understood the business. I understood what things were happening. I understood that, you know, the love and the care and the compassion or the friendships that you have, that they were not going to be affected regardless if you were for the team or not. But yeah, it was fun. We got lucky. We got lucky compared to other families. But it was fun because we always made Chicago home. And Ozzie made a point of that, not trying to test a lot of free agency and moving around, because it's hard on the families. It's when you're a player and you find a place, and you can raise a family in one area, it definitely helps a lot. And it helped us for sure, because home was always either Caracas or Chicago, except for those 3-4 awkward years that we were like in between. And we had this home in Chicago, but my dad didn't really work here.
Yeah. All right. Last thing for you, Ozzie Jr. Tell me what it's like now being on this side with consistency, hosting Being In over on La Vida Baseball, which is all about Latino baseball and news and culture. Give me somebody you've really enjoyed talking to recently on the podcast on Being In.
You know what? I think that the Miguel Cabrera interview during the last season towards the end was awesome, because we were talking, two friends talking, but it was more of like a professional conversation, and it was really cool to get that insight on Miguel. You know, the Being Guillen show kind of arose. I was doing La Vida Baseball, started off with the Ozzie Guillen Jr. show. I said, wouldn't it be cool if we could have my brother and my dad more consistently? They were open for it, and it's been awesome having just all of them on the show together. You know, having Ozzie give his perspective from what his views, and us having those conversations, you know, we don't agree with Ozzie on something, mm-hmm. or the way that we view the game. I think the best part of it is everywhere I've worked, from when I was at the Score to now being here at La Vida Baseball with Teamworks Media, is the creativity side. They've always let us run and be able to speak our mind and be able to look at it. And I think now it's a perfect time, because, you know, we're not 20, Ozzie's not 40 and with a chip on his shoulder. You know, we're all in our 30s, you know, kids. Ozzie's a grandfather. We definitely view the game from a different perspective. Don't have that chip on that shoulder. You know, it's not on a win basis. So it's really cool to see that we do talk about baseball, and we do get deep into baseball. And for those baseball, I like to call them nerds, like me, mm-hmm. we are going to get into, you know, the nitty-gritty of it. But then we also talk about fun things, things that are happening in the country, which are not easy conversations. Funny things when Ozzie just finds out about a new word in English that he has no idea what it means, and he asks us what it means, and then we tell him, and then he tries to use it in his vocabulary. But just we also talk about life, because it's a show. It's a family. It's a dynamic. It's not perfect. It's not pretty sometimes, but it's always fun, and we like to give that insight. And you know what? We know the sport. We know the teams in Chicago very well, and it's just fun to be able to do it. And it's such a laid back, and hopefully it keeps growing. It's fun. It went from being a hobby to something that we've been doing consistently now for a few months. You can check out the podcast at La Vida Baseball, the Being Guillen show. But it's fun. It's been a heck of a ride so far. And it's been fun even without baseball being there, because it's hard, you know, trying to talk about something that's not happening. You know, you don't want to beat up on the players so much and the owners every single day.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I like, people always talk about this. I like talking about guys going 4-for-4 and teams being in first place. And that's my favorite part, like just being able to talk positivity about the game. But hopefully when it comes back, you know, he'll keep doing his he'll come back as the pre and post game show, and we'll keep doing Being Guillen and just being able to bring fun content to the people that love baseball. Yeah. I'm for one that, you know, people say that the game's dying. I believe that the game is dying to some aspect, but for the people that it's alive for, they're in it more than ever, and that's who we're trying to create the content for.
All right, great stuff. Ozzie Jr., thank you so much, man. Appreciate the time. Happy Father's Day to you, and pass it on to your pops as well, okay?
Thank you. Same to you. Always a pleasure. Happy Father's Day.
All right, thank you. That's Ozzie Guillen Jr. joining me, Matt Spiegel, right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this thing and hand it off to Mark Grody. But we'll give you the latest on some of the negotiations if you missed some of the news this morning. And also, you'll hear from one Cub who got very emotional the other day talking about his father. That's next on 670 The Score.
My dad, he's followed my career very well. I just remember what he says to me, you know, play your hardest, play with your heart.
Father's Day will definitely be a little different for me this year. Really, really makes me thankful for, you know, what my dad has done for me.
Father's Day also to me is very special. I want to show how much I love them, but they know every day is for them.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best part of my life, you know, being a dad, and teaching my son everything I do.
That from Marquee the other day. Cubs players talking about their dad. It's Jeremy Jeffries first. A guy I really wish we were getting to know as a sports town, as a baseball city. The pitcher, former Brewer. Heard nothing but great things about the guy. But obviously there's no baseball and there's no conversation. Just a little bit in the spring training. You also heard Chris Bryant talking about his first Father's Day. Happy first Father's Day to him. Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez in there. Happy first Father's Day also to Nick Shepkowski, to Danny Parkins, and to any of you out there experiencing your first. Sean Dunstan, the former number one pick in all of baseball, was on Marquee the other day and was talking about his life. Born in Brooklyn, New York in 1963, in public housing, his father, Dad, worked as a cab driver, delivered furniture. His mom worked in a women's clothing store. And Dunstan, in high school, as an infielder, became great. His batting average in his senior year at Thomas Jefferson High School was .790. .790! With 10 homers, 37 stolen bases, and not once caught stealing a base. Not once. People went crazy for Sean Dunstan. And he ended up the number one overall pick and had a pretty darn good career when you think about it. 11 years with the Cubs, played with the Giants, Cubs again, Pirates, Indians, Giants, Cardinals, Mets, Cardinals, Giants. 2 times an All-Star, both with the Cubs. 150 career homers. Maybe didn't live up to number one overall, but that's an awfully high and absurd standard to live with. Dunstan was on Marquee the other day, and he got emotional when thinking about his father, Jack, and the influence that he had on Sean's life.
I'm very emotional with my dad. I lost my dad about 7 years ago, so this hurts. But my dad is the reason why I'm here. He taught me everything, how to be a man, how to be myself. Don't back down from nobody and just give it your all. My dad, by making sure my dad was a barber and my dad was a cab driver. And I made it through my dad with hard work. So it's funny how now I tip barbers really big and I tip cab drivers. I made it because of my father. My father's everything. Now I know why, I mean, how it is to be a father. Because I have 4 beautiful kids and a beautiful wife. And I know I'm hard on my kids is because I want them to do well. I'm sorry I'm crying, but I lost my dad. And I'm very tight with him and I love him every day. And I'm very successful because of my father. No other man is my idol. My idol is my dad. I just want to let the world know I am successful because of my father. Happy Father's Day, man.
Oh, my God. That just got me good. Oh, Sean, you should have told me that was going to break me apart in a million pieces right here at the end of Hit and Run. Why didn't you tell me about that, buddy?
It was good. It was good audio.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And he knows that's a man who feels blessed and realizes the good fortune to have 4 beautiful children and his beautiful wife. And he would not be successful, would not be enabled to do any of this without his father. I'm gonna take that with him. I'm going to tip barbers well. I'm going to tip cab drivers well. And I'm going to think about Sean Dunstan's dad next time I do it. That's for sure. Treat your fathers well if they are around. Treat your kids well. And if your fathers aren't around, I wish you peace and happiness on this day. And I appreciate those of you who have reached out and enjoyed some of the conversations, some of the stories, and enjoyed the interview with my father and my big bro from the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I know a lot of you who have reached out who do not have your father around felt it was very relatable and somewhat therapeutic to hear some of the same kind of relationships. We are way more similar than we are different, everybody. Have a good day. Be safe. Enjoy yourself. Happy Father's Day to you and to yours. And, Lord, I hope we have baseball. But even if we don't, we got dads, right? All right, everybody. Have a great day. Mark Grody is next. Sean Anderson, thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. It's Matt Spiegel signing off on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Like
I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.